Back at the beginning of the 19th century, wise men and women, honorable individuals themselves, came with sadness to realize that for all the foreseeable future, more and more ordinary people would need to give their entire lives to a dark hole in the ground or in service to a mind-destroying machine if a coal-fired dream world was to happen. People who grew up in the clean air and the folk society of villages did not make good workers for the screaming factories or the tunnels underground or the anthill offices. What was needed was some kind of halfway house that would train individuals for the halfway lives ordinary people would be more and more called upon to lead. In a utopia of machinery and steam, there could be free lunch for unprecedented numbers, but only if there were chains, bread, and water for the rest, at least for some unknown while. Plans for such a halfway institution as forced schooling, think of it as a training factory or a training mine, came together in Boston, Philadelphia, and New York, drawn by the best minds for the best motives. They inflicted stupendous damage on the libertarian rights and privileges bequeathed to Americans by the nation's founders. Profits from the industrial engine signed the checks for many 19th century educational experiments like New Lanark School in Scotland and New Harmony in Indiana. They bought Fanny Wright her school advocacy platform and helped her to impose it on the Philadelphia Working Man's Party agenda in 1829. Many of the 19th century experimental social colonies looked upon themselves as early emanations of utopia, previews whispering to men and women of what might be, if only they turned their backs on the past and schooled for a new day. The brevity of these experiments did nothing to discourage their successors. The coal of Westphalia, in association with the iron of Lorraine, welded the scattered states of Germany into a ferocious utopian empire in the last half of the 19th century. That empire, birthplace of successful mass forced schooling, made war upon the world, spreading its conception of research universities and its Spartan state philosophy of universal indoctrination and subordination all over the planet. In 1868, Japan adopted large parts of the Prussian constitution together with the Prussian style of schooling. The garment that Kohl fashioned for Aryan children was worn enthusiastically by Kohl-free Nipponese as their own. German mental science came to rule the classrooms of the world in the early 20th century, nowhere more thoroughly than in coal-rich and oil-rich America. America provided a perch from which to study people closely and resources with which to find ways to bring them into compliance. Even without the intense ideological motivation driving the project, the prospect of a reliable domestic market which could be milked in perpetuity would have been incentive enough to propel the school project, I believe. These new studies, growing out of the coal-swollen ranks of leisured academic lives, suggested there should be radical changes in the mental diet of children. A plan emerged piecemeal in these years to be slowly inserted into national schooling. Seen from a distance a century later, it is possible to discern the still shimmering outline of a powerful strategy drawing together at least 10 elements. The removal of the active literacies of writing and speaking, which enable individuals to link up with and to persuade others. Destruction of the narrative of American history connecting the arguments of the founding fathers to historical events, defining what makes Americans different from others besides wealth. Substitution of an historical social studies catalog of facts in place of historical narrative. Radical dilution of the academic content of formal curriculum, which familiarize students with serious literature, philosophy, theology, etc. This has the effect of curtailing any serious inquiries into economics, politics, or religion. Replacement of academics with a balanced diet concept of humanities, quote-unquote, physical education, counseling, etc., as substance of the school day. obfuscation or outright denial of the simple code-cracking drills which allow fluency in reading to anyone. The confinement of tractable and intractable students together in small rooms. In effect, this is a leveling exercise with predictable and pernicious results. A deliberate contradiction of common sense principles, rhetorically justified on the grounds of psychological and social necessities. The enlargement of the school day and year to blot up outside opportunities to acquire useful knowledge leading to independent livelihoods. The insertion of misleading surrogates for this knowledge in the form of shop classes, which actually teach little of skilled crafts. The shifting of oversight from those who have the greatest personal stake in student development, parents, community leaders, and the students themselves, to a ladder of strangers progressively more remote from local reality. All school transactions to be ultimately monitored by an absolute abstraction, the standardized test, correlating with nothing real and very easily rigged to produce whatever results are called for. Relentless, low-level hostility toward religious interpretations of meaning. There you have the brilliant formula used to create a coal-fired mass mind. Before his sudden death, I watched my beloved bachelor friend and longtime fellow schoolteacher, Martin Wallach, slowly surrender to forces of massification he'd long resisted. One day in his late 50s, he said, "There isn't any reason to go out anymore. They send food in. I have 300 channels. Everything is on TV. I couldn't see it all if I had 2 lifetimes. With my telephone and modem, I can get anything, even girls. There's only trouble outside anyway." He fell dead a year later, taking out his garbage.
Welcome to Utopia. We don't pray or pledge allegiance to anything here, but condoms and Ritalin are free for the asking. Rest in peace, Martin.